Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor New Zealand Thailand. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about episode 10 of this season. And I've brought in a great guest, if I do say so myself. She's from Survivor New Zealand season 1, a complete standout character from that season. Actually, probably ahead of her time strategy-wise when it comes to Survivor New Zealand history. Plus, she's the only good Survivor Shannon in international Survivor history, so I had to bring her on. Please join me in welcoming the great Shannon Quinn. Shannon, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's very exciting to be able to talk to another Shannon about Survivor.
Yeah, it's so strange saying my own name and like talking about it like that. But as I said, I had to have you on because before you came along, we had Shannon Elkins and we had Shambo, and that was just not a good vibe for Survivor Shannons.
No, I feel like luckily I didn't have too much to sort of, you know, beat from my predecessors in the game.
Yeah, it was a low bar, but you easily cleared it.
Oh, good, good. I'm glad. Well, hopefully at least.
Shannon, you've not been on RHAP before. So what have you been up to since, you know, being on your season last year? What's been going on for you since then?
Yeah, I have pretty much just been sort of knuckling down and getting right into my zookeeping work. So I'm still up in Auckland at Auckland Zoo and just doing mostly like animal training and lots of encounters and things like that. So yeah, it's been a really busy sort of year and a half since all of my season kind of finished up. So it's been really good to actually finally get to sink my teeth back into some Survivor again because I really missed it.
Yeah, have you been enjoying season 2?
Oh, I have been absolutely loving it. It is just a huge, huge step up from season 1. Even I would say that, even though I was on season 1, of course, but this is kind of everything I was hoping that my season would be. Like, I just feel like the production value and Matt and the contestants, everything is just completely stepped up a notch. It's so much closer to kind of what we see on the American Survivor. So yeah, I've been loving this season. It's so hard to keep up.
Yeah, you should have done a worse job in casting and then you could have got, you know, cast on. This is a note actually to all people who are in international versions. Usually it takes a season or two to kind of rev up. So don't do so well in casting on your first season. Get on their radar and then get in for the second season or the third season and then you'll be doing well.
Yes, that is definitely the way to go. I know, I just feel like I may have done a little bit better if I'd been on season 2 because I feel like that was kind of the gameplay that I was going after. Maybe if possibly me and Keisha had swapped places, I think she would have done amazing season 1 and I could have done a little bit better in season 2 possibly.
Yeah, who are the contestants that you've seen that you really like and think that you could have worked with from this season?
Oh, there's so many good ones that I would have loved the chance to work with. So JT, I think, was a mastermind. I'm so gutted that he had to step down when he did because yeah. I think he's gone all the way. I think there's a lot of players this season that I actually think would have definitely outsmarted me, to be honest. So potentially I wouldn't have actually done as well as I thought, but I'm really liking what Matt has been doing so far in the last few episodes. But apart from him, I just think Lisa is really sort of starting to come into her own as well. And I think she's starting to really just manipulate the game a little bit more. So there's so many people that I think I would have really loved the chance to work with. So who knows, maybe in a future season down the line, hopefully.
Yeah, well, I think that they've really put the emphasis on strategy and maybe coming from your season, you know, from the first episode matches and were saying like it's going to be about, you know, gameplay and playing really hard. So I think that that kind of comes from your season and maybe looking at things that you were doing that not a lot of the other contestants were doing and just hoping that contestants would follow on in that similar vein.
Yeah, I definitely think when they were casting the season, that was probably something that they were looking for because it just seemed to work out in season 1 that almost everybody they chose wanted to play, you know, with honesty and integrity and all of that. And I do think it is hard in New Zealand to find people that are wanting to play, you know, that cutthroat sort of gameplay. But I think that probably was what they were specifically looking for this time round. And they've definitely found it because it makes such a huge difference, people actually wanting to play the game.
Yeah, I think that if I was, you know, there's people on every season, I think, who can go the way of, of wanting to play and not wanting to play. And, you know, even in your season, which was dominated by wanting to go with that really truthful route, you had players like you. And in this season, which is way more strategic gameplay, there's still players like, for example, Brad, who's Jury Villa I was watching last week and who was talking about how he wouldn't, you know, lie to someone one-on-one or look someone in the eye and lie to them. So there is that dichotomy there, I think, in every season, but it becomes about, you know, I guess how many more players of one side are there? And then what just becomes like the dominating culture. And definitely in your season, it went one way. In this season, it's gone another. And I think that we can both agree that the season is better for it when they're all like lying to each other and stabbing each other in the back.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that that's kind of it. Just when you're going into a season, I just really wanted people, you know, to put aside all of that and realize that they're playing a game and then be open to that sort of gameplay. Because when you step up to do Survivor, I kind of feel like in a way anything goes, you know, to a limit. But in terms of sort of lying to people, for Brad, for example, because I did see how he was so, you know, hurt about Matt kind of lying to his face. But for example, with him, if Matt had played it any other way, if Brad had any inkling he was going home, he would have played his idol. So it's kind of like you get to that point, that's the only way to progress your game further, is you need to be really convincing at lying. And I don't really see it as a notch on your character as a person. It's just you're playing a sort of stronger game than they are, I guess. It's just one way to get ahead.
Yeah, if only more people on your season had agreed with that. But no, definitely here at RHAP, I think we agree with that. Let's talk a little bit about the episode and the vote, which I thought was kind of a crazy vote. And almost the episode for me was edited to be almost purposely vague and misleading. It was like you saw so many different plans and you weren't really sure which plan would go. And it was just kind of overlaid with this confessional from Matt that was quite generic and just talking about playing the game. So it wasn't just like really specific strategy that we were seeing. But basically, we saw 5 out of 8 people in this episode, in Renee, Dave, Eve, Tara, and Tessa, brought up in conversation as potential targets, which is kind of crazy to me. And that's why I think players like Lisa, Matt, and Adam are the power players at the moment. How do you see the dynamics at the moment from the tribe?
That actually, the three that you just listed, Lisa, Adam, and Matt, were my like top players in the last even kind of 2 episodes, to be honest. But I was the same. I was thrown this episode. I went into it kind of having a bit of an idea of who I thought was going to go out. You know, I kind of thought, surely they're going to try and take Matt down, because why wouldn't you? He's such a strong threat. But yeah, as the episode started, we finally heard from Tara, which was bizarre. Like, who is this player? Like, I just hear nothing from her. And then all of a sudden we finally got, you know, a confessional, and also hearing her talk to people at camp. It was amazing. So I thought she was going home, because I thought it was going to be sort of classic Survivor, you know, give them a little bit of airtime when it's their turn to get voted out. So
yeah,
over the show, I could not predict it. And yeah, when it was Renee, I can kind of see where they were coming from, but I was pretty shocked.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about poor Tara, who last week may have complained that she got absolutely no content, and this week probably would have preferred that from the content that she was getting. It was brutal for Tara in this episode. You had other tri members saying she's done nothing, saying that she mistakenly thinks she controlled the Brad vote. They were kind of explaining why she had no content in this like really meta way, which I thought was really funny. Then the Tessa conversation does not go well. They can basically never work together again after that. So that went poorly. Then later she has a conversation with Renee that doesn't go well. Her dusting was weird in the challenge and they all get really mad for her. It was like a really, really unfortunate episode for Tara for the first time we've seen her in what feels like months.
Yeah, I couldn't really stop laughing, because it was really bizarre. What, from going from hearing nothing to all of a sudden everybody hates Tara. And I was like, why? Like, surely this hasn't all happened all at once. It was just such a random edit that she happened to get.
Yeah.
But I definitely think, from what we saw at least, it did seem like she was kind of, yeah, not playing the greatest social strategy after the Brad vote out, because she was burning quite a few bridges, which she probably didn't really need to do, because she kind of could have just sort of hidden behind, you know, some of the other bigger players, because really at this stage, she should be cruising through to the end, but, you know, unlikely to get any votes unless she's going to mix things up soon and take the lead. Although, like you said, it was really random that she thinks she was, you know, one of the instigators of the Brad takedown. I guess she was a swing vote, but yeah, I didn't really see her as having that much power over it, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I had heard throughout the week that, you know, Tara was saying that she had was basically claiming the vote, the Brad vote, and that she had brought on, you know, Chani, and that she'd brought on Lisa, who'd brought on Matt. And it was painful watching then her fellow cast members in Matt, Lisa, and Adam basically say that that isn't what happened and that she was mistaken in thinking that, because they just completely shut that perception down. And I thought that the cherry on top of this horrible edit for Tara this episode was that Matt talks about people who are easy to beat in the finals and how there aren't any people who are easy to beat. And then the editors, because they're so mean, just cut to a close up of Tara. And I was like, well, that's not on purpose. You know, like that is completely purposeful and throwing her under the bus in the edit there. So I think maybe next week she'll hope to get no confessionals again, because this was brutal.
That was brutal. Oh, just thinking about her watching at home, it wouldn't have been pleasant. But she's kind of, yeah, it seemed to be, she kind of became the easy target this week. But still, it seems, yeah, I don't know, when they were starting to throw her name around as well, like they wanted to get her out, that seemed a really random move to me at this stage in the game. So I don't know where she sits anymore, because I would have thought for sure she was going to, you know, sail through at this stage, but I don't know if she rubs people the wrong way and sort of starts sweeping benches at challenges again, then it may be a different story. But yeah, I think she'll be hoping definitely for less confessionals next week.
Yeah, we're going to have to talk about Dusting Gate 2018 for sure a bit later. But yeah, I just think it's socially, you know, even Lisa's saying she doesn't want to work with her. She puts Renee offside, she puts Tessa offside, she's annoying everyone. So I feel like that's why her name started getting thrown around. But then once they sat down and thought about it, they were like, she's just not a big enough threat. And I think they'll probably come to that conclusion every week, so I wouldn't be surprised if she does sell through to the end, because like, why would you get rid of her and when, unless you're just that annoyed by her? But she doesn't seem that annoying, so yeah, I could see her definitely getting to the end and maybe losing. And I think that's why the editors maybe put that shade into the editing to do a close-up of her face when they're talking about basically goats for the final tribal council. But this was just a bizarre edit for her. And talking about people who burst out of the blocks in quite a negative way in this episode, not to just bash on all the contestants, but I want to talk about Renee, who left in this episode, and not a great episode for her on the way out, I thought. What did you think of her in this episode?
Oh, that was almost hard to watch. That became really awkward, but entertaining, but very awkward. Yeah, it was kind of, I don't know whether she just got a really bad edit, because surely she wouldn't have been, you know, as hung up on, it seemed like such a small thing that she really kind of couldn't let go in the end. But then even when you watch Jury Villa, like it came up again and she kind of still didn't back down again. But yeah, I think it's just crazy watching as a viewer, because from pretty much everything we saw, to me at least, it looked like, you know, very clearly Renee was the one that jumped ship and decided to betray the others, more or less. So I was, that was really random that she sort of kept clinging on to the fact that Dave and everybody kind of betrayed her first. Yeah. But no, I would have been, I can see that she was, you know, trying to fight as much as possible at the final tribal, but yeah, not an ideal way to go out, that's for sure.
Yeah, I was asking last week when she said that Dave had turned on her first. I was like, what is she talking about? And I had thought that maybe it was in Aaron and Dave choosing to vote out Dylan over Matt, which is what she had wanted to do. But it's even before that, in that she's so mad that they told Josh to vote for her. And what was the split vote plan B of a fake decoy vote. So it's just so nothing. Like, it's Lex Vandenberg levels. I think I said this of the time, of just caring so much that your name is out there. But like, why? You know, Josh comes to Aaron and Dave and is asking them who he's going to vote for. Well, Aaron can't say himself. He can't say Josh, Matt, and Adam. He can't say Dylan, because that's the plan as far as Josh knows. And he can't say Dave, because they're meant to be going with like an all-male alpha alliance. So of course it has to be Renee. And the fact that she's still hung up on this and it's been like weeks at this point is crazy to me. You know, for it to have gone wrong, Josh would have needed an idol. Dylan would have needed an idol. They both would have needed the same Kung Kao idol, which seems impossible. And Josh would needed to, you know, have needed to not being completely blindsided. So she was going to be fine, you know, and Dave and Aaron really did choose to go with her over going with the Alpha Alliance. They made that choice to go with her. So just the fact that she didn't go and communicate with them and talk to them after, I think is the problem, and was just on this rampage that they didn't even know about. And I think that she didn't just jump ship from Chani to Kung Kao. She just, like, she burned the ship. You know, she obliterated all those relationships, all those potential jury votes, boxed herself into the point where she was going to have to be on the bottom of Kung Kao, and then left herself with very few options from where I was sitting.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, initially, when she decided to jump ship, I kind of thought, yeah, fair enough, because at this point, it kind of looks like Chani are going to get pretty much wiped off the, you know, face of the game. And if she jumps now, she'll be hopefully, you know, one of the last people to get targeted. So I could kind of understand why she jumped initially. But yeah, it was kind of like she jumped and then she just really, really burnt those ties where she kind of didn't need to at that stage. But I definitely think, seeing how long she's held on to this grudge against Dave and Aaron and all of the ones that she thinks kind of wronged her, her being on the jury now, I would say anybody that, you know, betrayed her to get her out for this last vote, I can't see her ever coming around. And if they're in the final, I can't see her voting for them, because I think she'll be, you know, someone to hold on to a grudge right to the end. So they may have lost a vote in her, but yeah, I think she kind of pretty much made her own bed in this one. She kind of really limited her options in the long run.
Yeah, she was totally blinded by the grudge, and I completely agree that that would probably be how she is as a juror. Maybe it's a bit different with food over at Jury Villa, but if it's anything like this, she can hold a grudge for a very long time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I agree that I agreed why she should, that she should jump to Kung Kao when Chani was a sinking ship. But I don't agree with how she did it in destroying those relationships. And now that I know why she did it, I don't agree with the motive either. So it's like, what she did was good, but the intention was bad. And then the way she went about it was bad. And then she was left with no options. I mean, like, clearly she just wasn't a big enough part of anyone's plans or of the majority's plans for them to keep her around. While she did seem quite important to, like, and Adam and Tessa seemed to like her, I guess, you know, she wasn't important enough to Matt and Lisa. She destroyed everything with Chani, so it was just like an easy vote. And I feel like she can probably take a lot of the blame for that, for being quite blinded by that grudge.
Yeah, exactly. And I also think, on the one hand with her, I do think the whole way through the game, she's kind of never really truly been safe. So with my rankings each week, I always had her pretty low, even though obviously she survived for quite a while. So I think maybe as well, by this stage in the game, they're definitely being worn down mentally. So maybe it was just starting to take quite a big toll on her as well, because there was probably quite a lot of stress that she was under, you know, every single time they had to go to tribal, because pretty much every time she was one of the potential options who could go home. So maybe it was just driving her a little bit crazy. I don't know. I know for me, I was getting a little bit crazy, you know, in the late 20s of the game. So it possibly was something to do with that as well.
Yeah, maybe. You know, she it's true. She never really had like a foothold in the game. And I guess her most important relationship, and something that I think could have really helped her and probably did help her, was that relationship with Adam. But, you know, Adam does vote for Dave here, and he does seem to really want Dave to go, but it's just not enough at that point. And I think it's just because she cut off the options. And I want to talk about the Jury Villa as well, which I know you've watched. For any of our listeners who haven't watched Jury Villa, please go seek it out. It's so much fun, so much conflict. Basically, she arrives at Jury Villa. She says, you know, she's excited to see Brad, but not Aaron. And I find this really funny, because she was annoyed about getting a vote from Josh because Aaron had told Josh to do it. But she received a vote from Brad last episode because she was the actual split vote plan B, not the decoy split vote plan B, the actual one. And she's completely fine with Brad, but she's not good with Aaron. So she's sitting with Aaron and it's really, really awkward. And then he's just basically like, I'm really glad you got voted out. It's must watch television. Please seek out the Jury Villa.
Yeah, it is. That was very dramatic. I did think that, I don't know, I thought it was pretty intense that Aaron wanted to bring it up, you know, on the night of her getting voted out. But I mean, I was glad for it because it was pretty entertaining to watch. But yeah, I kind of felt for her a little bit, but very, very random.
Yeah, I mean, she hasn't even, like, had a shower. She's just, like, sitting there, and Aaron's just not saying anything, and then eventually he's just, like, wants to talk about the fact that he's really happy she's at Drury Villa. Not because he's happy to see her, but just because he just doesn't want her to be in the game. And he's obviously been stewing on that for the last few days. I mean, his reaction on the jury bench as well when she was talking about being betrayed, and just he was, like, laughing, and he had, like, his head in his hands, just like, what are you talking about? So he's obviously, like, pretty emotional about that. Not to spoil Drury Villa, but a couple of funny moments were that Brad is like amazingly hilarious during the fight, just like awkwardly eating next to them. And then they do eventually make up to like a really nice montage that's narrated by Matt Chisholm. So like it does have a happy ending, but it's nice to see some actual conflict at the Drury Villa or Ponderosa, which we don't see as much of in the US at the moment. So I thought it was really entertaining.
Yeah, it always seems to get a bit swept over, but I think that's what made it so much better is that he decided to confront her, you know, on the night of. I think if they had even left it one day and everybody had kind of slept on it and finally eaten some proper food, I reckon we probably wouldn't have had such a big reaction. So
yeah,
I was glad that it kind of happened when it did, because it was, yeah, good to kind of see those things hashed out finally.
Yeah, yeah. And another couple of people that I want to talk about are two power players in Matt and Dave, whose relationship has now become a defining factor of the season. And some people have been pretty mad on Twitter, you know, fans and contestants alike, you know, Dylan and Brad kind of talking about how that relationship affected the season. And also, I guess, those two particular contestants being voted out, you know, also Josh as well. So I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, I have some thoughts on this, but what do you think about them being friends from before the game?
You know what, like, because I've heard, yeah, all of the people who are pretty upset about it. And up until probably the last couple of episodes, I honestly kind of didn't see it as that much of a big thing, purely because I saw each of their games and I kind of thought separately they were doing a pretty good job, you know? And I thought they were both playing pretty good, strong games and not relying on each other too much. And I kind of thought they would get to where they were without each other anyway. The only time where it's really started to kind of come up and I'm sort of thinking, yeah, that's definitely an advantage, is lately, because Dave has very, very clearly been right on the bottom next to the person who is getting voted out. He's had votes towards his name. If he didn't have such a strong friendship with Matt, there is like no chance that he would have held on to his idol. He definitely, I'm sure, would have played that idol by now, definitely. And the fact that he has so much trust in Matt to not play his idol when he knows votes are coming his way, I think just shows how strong their friendship is. And if they didn't have that, I think from just meeting each other at Tribe Swap, I don't think there's any way they would be able to trust each other quite as much. So now I can absolutely see, you know, where players like Brad and Dylan will be getting upset, because yeah, if I was in their position, I'd be pretty upset about that as well. But on the other hand, like I said, I think they're both playing really strong games anyway. So who knows? I think maybe they could have made it this far potentially.
Yeah. I mean, from a TV perspective, I think it's been compelling to watch. So from an entertainment perspective, I'm not mad at it. And I do see how it can come across as unfair. You know, it is an advantage obviously, but it's also a difficult situation that I think if played really badly could sink your game and could still be really hard for them. I mean, they're still there next to each other. They're both huge threats. They can't really go to the end together. One of them's going to lose. They can't both win. So it's like, how do you navigate that? And we saw a bit of that with Matt this episode where he's like, how far do I take Dave? And cutting Dave and making him mad when he's a real life friend could be brutal. And it could be this blackmail there where Dave could tell them about the friendship and that could really come back to haunt Matt's game as well, and vice versa. So it's a hard thing to navigate. While it is an advantage, I also think that it brings out, you know, the quality of good players, and they are both good players in their own right. So that's why they have navigated this situation well. I do think that Matt, who was saved through the swap a lot, you know, by Dave, now he's playing, he's done so well. He did well, you know, in the former stages of the game as well, but he's got all these relationships now. He basically has a relationship with every single person in the game, I think. You know, it's not just Dave. So he has that control, and that's a credit to him and the relationships that he's built into his gameplay. And Dave as well, you know, yes, he has Matt there in his ear telling him not to play the idol. But you know what? He got 3 votes to 5. It takes one person to flip to make it a 4-4, and it doesn't have to be Matt. So it's still nerve-wracking when you know you're getting votes to not play the idol. So I still do give him some credit, not as much credit as I would, but some credit there not playing the idol. So I rate them both as players. I think that they're both good players. They've both navigated well. They've taken the situation, which is a very complex situation, which we've really never seen before. They've both played it really, really well, and they've taken that advantage where I think it could sink their games. So while I understand people are annoyed about it, I think that's just a different perspective of looking at it because it's part of the game and we just have to accept it.
Yeah, definitely. And I agree with you. I don't think that they can both get to the end together. I think Matt is seeming to be a much smarter player than I initially gave him credit for. And I think he would clearly know that he wouldn't want to sit next to Dave at the end, just because they both kind of have some similar qualities. But like you said, Matt seems to have built a much stronger alliance with a lot of different people that are remaining in the game. So I think, yeah, I think he won't take Dave all the way to the end. That's the way I see it panning out anyway. But yeah, on the other hand of things, I don't know if I would want to be there with one of my closest friends. The thought of having to actually betray one of your good friends in the game, that is a whole nother level entirely. And I mean, it's hard enough lying to people who you've only met through the game. It's never a pleasant thing to do. But if they're one of your best friends, that is a really, really difficult thing to go about. I wonder whether possibly these two have kind of had the conversation with each other at all about kind of leaving the game. Anything that happens in the game kind of stays in the game. But I guess even that is easier said than done.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a hard thing. Like, that's the kind of thing you say until your high school friend does betray you and votes you out. So yeah, I think it's like, it's going really well right now, but we'll see how it ends up going for them. Because yeah, to play a game that only one person can win with a good friend, I mean, I can barely play board games with my good friends because I'm too competitive and I will hurt them. So it's a hard situation for them to be in. And right now we're like, oh, it's so unfair, and we'll see how, well, you know, it's going so well. But in a couple of rounds from now, if Matt has to get rid of Dave or vice versa, and then it's like betraying someone in the game, but so much more, and they have to deal with that, you know, that'll come back to bite them on Survivor. So I feel like the game is to a degree self-policing to a point where this is difficult as well as it's an advantage.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, it's worked out bad for some other players, but in the same sort of vein, I feel like, you know, I'm pretty sure Brad would have got voted out at some point anyway. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like the people that have gone probably would have been targeted regardless of whether or not Matt and Dave were good friends, you know? So yeah. I agree. I think it's going to pan out. I feel like the game is going to sort of twist and turn, and their friendship isn't going to be as crucial closer to the end.
Yeah. And, you know, from Matt's perspective, and also this is true of someone of Adam, we were getting a lot of questions and comments that I agree with, which kind of put you in their position of being between two alliances. Like, do you see yourself kind of in that position that particularly Matt is in right now, where he's between two alliances and trying to navigate both sides of the tribe?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's pros and cons for being in that position for sure. But I do think that the further you go through, once you're in the merge trying to play both sides, it is such a tricky path to navigate. And it can so easily put you in the worst position possible. Or you could get, you know, all the way to the end, but you pretty much betrayed everybody to get there. So it's not an ideal position to be in, but I think that he probably is going to play it a lot better than I did. So he just seems like such a likable person that I feel like he's going to sort of navigate it in a way that hopefully doesn't put people too much against him. Like, I even think somebody like Brad, who obviously was quite upset when he was blindsided, I feel like Brad's the sort of person that really respects big moves in a game. And I feel like possibly further down the line, once they've had a little bit more time to think about it, I think even Brad would come around to seeing that it was the right move to make at the time. So I think Matt would probably have a good chance at convincing a jury at the end, even if they were a little bit bitter.
Yeah, I mean, when Renee came out of the game and her jury villa, she did seem a bit like Matt's controlling it and that makes me mad and he's not going to get votes and stuff. But, you know, she just came out of the game. And as we've said, she's someone who might hold on to a grudge. So I do hope for most of the jurors that they would be able to reward that kind of gay play, whether it's Matt or whether it's someone else who's made big strategic moves and played the game really well. I hope that it would come down to that, and that this jury who are in a season that's particularly strategic, especially from season one, would be able to reward that.
Yeah, and I think they will, because we've already seen Aaron, for example. He was the one, wasn't he, that said he really wanted to see some big moves made, and that is definitely like what he's looking for in a winner. So at least they've got him, who should be kind of playing it a little bit more evenly. And I think from the people remaining, a lot of the ones that could get out, I think, probably won't hold as much of a grudge as Renee seems to.
Yes, I hope so. I don't think anyone can hold as much of a grudge as Renee, based on what I'm seeing with the Josh vote, yeah, which we're still talking about weeks later.
Yeah, it seems that way, yeah.
Yeah, but I really am starting to see a divide between some of the players and the people more on the bottom, these like real movers and shakers basically versus the rest, where it's really kind of crazy because I really do see Lisa, Matt, and Adam at the top, and that's just 3 of 8. So we're like, in a perfect world where Survivor is a chess game, the other 5 people get together and are like, we've literally all been spoken about as targets in this 1-2-day period. Like, we should get together and take out the power players. And I guess they're just not thinking like that. And there's also, you know, relationships that they don't have. And Matt describes it so well, talking about how he uses other people's conflict between like Renee and Dave and then Tessa and Tara. And when you create those gaps in the social relationships, it really, really hinders you strategically as well. And it's the fact that Lisa, Matt, and Adam seem to have the best relationships just generally across the board, that they can just control it all, even by being in a minority.
Yeah, it does definitely seem that way. Like, they have so much control. I'm actually really amazed, especially with Matt, who so easily, you know, everybody could have flipped on him by now and really targeted him, but they haven't seemed to. I think one of the other things is, it seems like there's, from the rest of the players, not the big movers and shakers, but everybody else, a lot of them kind of seem to be a little bit more kind of like followers. Like, you kind of saw Tess when Brad got out, because she had been so strong up to there, but I think it's because she had that big security of her alliance. And you saw, as soon as Brad was gone, she was really not scrambling in a strategic way, but just kind of trying to cling on to any sort of lifeline that she could find. So I don't really think people like Tess or Tara or even Eve are that confident in going out and sort of paving their own way just yet. Maybe it will change a little bit later on, but for now it kind of looks like they're just kind of trying to cling to where the numbers are and kind of go with the majority. But I think they're going to have to really start upping their game if they want to get noticed for this, for the last part of the game, because otherwise they're not going to have that much to put to their name otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, Tessa, the day after Brad got voted out, was pretty much just like, oh, I hate the high school drama, just vote me out. I'm like, Tessa, this is the first sign of adversity you've had the entire game. Like, you were in the majority of Kung Kao, switched to a, you know, another majority on the swap drive, like had a majority through the merge, and now she's like left out of the vote. She's like, ah, I can't be bothered with this. Like, first sign of adversity, you know, these are the players. Like, I think that there are the Matts, the Adams, the Lisas, and I think Dave is kind of in that as well. I mean, he's on the back foot, but I think more just situationally coming from Chani. But I think that he has like the abilities as a player, but they can adapt and kind of work with the plan, whereas some of those other players are just kind of there.
Yeah, it does definitely seem like that. And I feel like as well, because Tess kind of had a very clear, you know, there's quite a few clear people that she could have convinced people to kind of get together and go for. So she definitely has room to move. Like, she's got some really strong points to make that could influence the vote, but it just doesn't seem like she's that interested in going for it yet. But maybe she's just a little bit shell-shocked after last week, potentially. But the one I'm really surprised about, which is just blowing me away, is Adam, because he has been one of the best social players of the season, in my opinion, and he's playing a very, very good strategic game. And yet, I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't even know if anybody has ever mentioned his name. I don't know if he has ever been talked about as one of the potential people to go home in an episode. So I don't know how he's flying so far under the radar.
Yeah, that's so true. Like, again, everyone was mentioned this episode. Matt, you know, Lisa mentioned in confessional. So it was just Lisa and Adam in this one episode who weren't mentioned. And Adam, who's even been like in the minority at a swap, we've never seen them talk about him. And I think Can it just be that his social game is that good? I mean, just seeing the way that people reacted to him winning immunity with such joy, basically, at his success. And I was like, wow, what a testament to the social game that he's playing. But surely it can't just be that they like him so much that they never bring him up. Like, is he doing something else or is it just that?
Yeah, or possibly maybe they don't think he's playing a very strong game because, of course, I guess we see a lot of his confessionals, so we know he is, you know, pretty much has an opinion about absolutely everybody in the tribe and definitely has a lot to say and a lot of strategy to play. But maybe nobody else sees that. Maybe they think that he is kind of, you know, one of the people right on the bottom that just isn't a threat whatsoever. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they go because I don't know, maybe he also, because we see such a feisty side of him. His confessionals are absolute gold. I am so, oh my gosh, the producers for choosing him, that is just the best person they could have ever chosen for this season. Mm-hmm. I love him or hate him. He is brilliant TV, but he obviously must tone it down quite a lot when he's actually interacting with everybody else, because surely otherwise he would have gotten on someone's nerves by now. But he seems to really, really be able to pretty much hide behind every other player that's left.
Yeah, I think that everyone just likes him so much. And maybe if you're just making people laugh and smile in these really dire situations that they just want to keep you around, and he's definitely doing that. Edit-wise, the best thing to happen to Adam's game was that Dylan got voted out. Probably the best thing to happen to him personally based on that negative relationship. But also, now he's funny and he's ranting and his confessionals are so good and not mean to Dylan. So I like that part of it when it's more about Jurassic Park and less about how much he hates Dylan. So I think that's really, really good. Even when he's like taunting the chickens. And I laughed, and I'm a vegetarian. Like, Adam makes me laugh and then hate myself for laughing. That's basically like my relationship with Adam.
Yeah, it's exactly like that. And I was the same. I thought that whole, you know, feud that was going between him and Dylan just seemed so uncalled for. So at that point in the game, I was really anti-Adam because I really liked Dylan. And I thought Dylan was playing a really good game. And from what we saw, you know, wasn't doing anything wrong. I don't understand why there was so much hatred from Adam towards him. So I'm glad, like you said, that now that's kind of in the past and now he's just a little bit more lighthearted and not as ruthless towards the other players as well. So, yeah, I'm really liking Adam now. But, yeah, I don't know who he's going to move forward with because it's really random. He keeps being kind of in the last couple of votes, he's been in the minority and been on the wrong side of the votes. But he still, in my opinion, doesn't seem like he's under any sort of threat. Like, I just can't see him going home next week still. I don't even think he'll be close to going home.
Yeah, well, last week he didn't vote for Brad, but obviously knew about it. And I said that that's, you know, choosing the Matt side when you don't tell Brad, who has an idol, that his name is out there. But this week he did vote for Dave. So I don't know how much he was actually blindsided or if he's just doing the same thing again where it's like, okay, I know that Renee is going home, but I'm not going to send her out the door with, you know, a bad taste in her mouth, especially if she can hold a grudge, as we've said. So I don't know. In her jury villa, Renee says that she basically knew what was up. I don't know, you know, obviously people will say that. I don't know if that's true. But if Adam had the same perspective, he might have just been like, okay, well, I just won't vote for her and I'll vote for Dave because I've gotten a relationship with Dave. I don't know. If he's even in the minority of this, I still feel like he's fine. He's got such a good relationship with Matt. He's got Tessa under his thumb. I mean, he was close with Renee and basically he's lost her now. But he's just got so many other relationships that he can work with.
Yeah, he does. And he seems like the sort of player as well that when he's under pressure, he seems to really be able to scramble. Like at the tribe swap, he really, you know, got off his butt and really started chatting with all of the Chani members and really wedged himself in there well. So I think under pressure, even if it looks like he's got no alliance left whatsoever, he is just such a good social player that I think he's able to build those relationships new as well. So I think he'll be able to roll with the punches for a little while longer.
Yeah, I mean, I want to talk about the reward challenge where Adam really shined. I mean, he definitely won the award for like best at the product placement and definitely like he should be employed by the brand. What was it called? It was Vodafone Rewards Program. I love how they kept saying it over and over, but I still couldn't remember without my notes. So definitely did a good job of seeping into my brain. He was amazing complaining about not watching Jurassic World. Also, I thought that they would be watching the sequel for Jurassic World, which is out in cinemas now. But no, they just were watching Jurassic World from 2015. Like, are you guys so behind in New Zealand that you're getting that now? Like, why were they watching this movie from 3 years ago?
That is exactly what I thought when I was watching it. I thought for sure, I was like, oh man, awesome. They got to watch the brand new one months early. And then I saw that it was the original. I was like, classic New Zealand. Honestly, the reward... I'm sorry, but the rewards this season just crack me up every single week. It just blows me away. They're just trying so hard to get those products in there. But I mean, tuna last week and an old movie this week. Oh man, it's so funny. But to be fair, in all honesty, I really, when I was playing, watching a movie or something like that would have been a top reward for me. So, yeah, I kind of can see where they're going with that. But I do think, yeah, classic New Zealand rewards. I think they'll probably have like one good one closer to the end because they seem to save up all their money for one big splash out. But apart from that, we'll just keep getting ones like this, which crack me up. But
I mean, they're still slightly better than the ones that you guys got for the most part.
Yeah, I don't even remember half the ones we got.
You got chocolate in a bag.
Oh yeah, melted chocolate in a bag. That was a good one.
Yeah.
That was one of the top ones. nuts and like dried fruit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good times.
Was not good. But this one I did do a little bit of an internet deep dive about, you know, Survivor movies. And this is the first certified fresh movie to ever play on Survivor. So I got to give New Zealand credit for that. You know, Jurassic World from 2015, 71% on Rotten Tomatoes. Otherwise, we have Treasure Island, which got 100%, but only has 6 reviews. So it's not certified fresh. Then there's Gulliver's Travels, 20%. And Jack and Jill, which has just a measly 3%. So in terms of that, New Zealand's actually winning with the Survivor movies.
Wow, those are really, really random choices for Survivor. I don't know why they would choose those ones. But yeah, but my...
Because of product placement.
Yeah, it must be. But the other thing that I had against it was, I mean, okay, fair enough. They're like in the middle of Thailand. I get it. But the screen was like so small. No, I think maybe I just have such high expectations. But I thought they were going to go and have like a huge cinema screen. And then it's like... a 50-inch TV, if that. So that cracks me up as well. And probably like cold popcorn, knowing New Zealand.
Yeah, I mean, giving them just popcorn also seems quite cruel. Like, that is not a food reward. That's nothing.
No, where's the Choc Toc? There was nothing nice. I don't even like popcorn that much.
Yeah, neither. I would just be like, nah, just give me the soda. I don't eat popcorn at movies. No. I feel like I've just ragged on all the awards for the rewards.
So ruthless, but they crack me up. They're trying so hard this season, though.
I know, it's adorable. And you know what? All the sponsors, like, we really need the sponsors, so they should keep doing it. And I will go out and I'll watch Jurassic Park from 2015 if that's what they want me to do. I don't really know what they're trying to get me to do, but whatever it is, I will do it.
Yeah, exactly. It's working. I kind of, like, I don't even like tuna, but I kind of felt like tuna last week. So it's definitely getting in there on some level.
Yeah, my dad made my mom go out and buy John West tuna because he was like, I really feel like this. He's never eaten it before. I'm like, this is really working. So you know what? They should keep investing in Survivor New Zealand.
That is amazing. That is exactly what they want.
But yeah, I thought this was hilarious. And also they get, you know, videos from home, which was great. My favorite part about this was that Dave's cat was in it. And I was like, oh, if I got this, I would just want my cat. Like, none of the other people in my life, just give me like a 2-minute video of my cat and I'd be good to go. And then I'll just watch the movie with Chris Pratt and that'll be a great day.
Oh man, same. That would just be ideal. I love any of my animals in there. I would have been in tears. That was very, very cute. The one that cracked me up the most though was Tess. Tess seemed so unimpressed. When her family were on, like, I'm sure, maybe she's just not, you know, someone that shows emotions that often on the outside, but that cracked me up just to compare her reaction to everybody else's. And she just seemed like so blasé about the fact that her family were on the TV.
The one that I thought was really funny was that Matt said about his partner. He was like, I didn't think I'd miss her that much. I'm like, well, that's a rude thing to admit.
I know. Yeah, no, that was cute. His reaction was so cute.
Yeah, they were good. And it was funny because it was like Dave and Matt probably know each other's long-term partners if they're friends, right? So it's kind of awkward seeing them there and being like, oh, is that your girlfriend or your fiance? Like, that's nice.
Oh, they probably did. I didn't even think about that. See, that's what, going back to that again, see, that's so hard for them to actually keep their relationship on the down low through all of this. I wouldn't even be able to do it. That's like another skill level altogether.
Yeah, I kind of talk about this when I talk about people who keep major secrets for the whole game, like Adam Klein keeping that his mom is really sick, or Jeremy Collins keeping that, you know, he's going to have a baby and then admitting it at Final Tribal Council. And I always think that people should get credit for that at Final Tribal Council, because you're playing the game with this like massive extra layer that no one has to know about. You're doing double the amount of lying about this outside situation that you have. And you still have to make genuine connections with other people while having the thing that's constantly on your mind that you're not allowed to tell people. So I think that if you can maintain that, that is really impressive, and you should be credited for that. And I think that the fact that they've kept it so secret and still being able to be genuine with other people and form other relationships is like a credit to who they are as game players.
Yeah, definitely. Especially considering the fact that they're literally together 24/7, and majority of the time you have absolutely nothing to do other than talk to the people around you. So to keep something like that so secret, all credit to them, because that is a hard, hard task.
Yeah, another thing from this reward was that Lisa was talking about, I guess, eventually getting rid of Matt. And they're a duo we've seen be pretty close basically from the beginning. What do you think about her plan of like not doing it now, but kind of waiting a vote and getting four people together to take out like basically her best friend in the game?
I can definitely see where she's coming from in kind of waiting for the numbers to be on her side. But I think the issue that she's going to face is there's not actually that many more, you know, tribals until final three, is it? It's only four, right? So It's not, you know, it's actually probably achievable for him to win four immunities in a row. I wouldn't put it past him. So to be honest, if I was her, I would be targeting him as soon as possible. And even though they have been such a tight duo, I mean, she's a smart player, and I feel like everybody else surely would see the threat that Matt poses. Because right now, as it stands, I don't know if there's anybody currently who could sit beside Matt at the end and possibly beat him. But I don't know if that's just because he's playing the sort of game that I really like to see. Maybe they see it differently, but I think he's such a threat that, yeah, Lisa really, really should be, in my opinion, targeting him now. So I can fully see where she's going with that.
Yeah, I do kind of see it from both ways, because, I mean, look, she only wants to flip at odd numbers, which I feel is like really stable survivor strategy that we've always spoken about. And I feel like her RHAP patronage is kind of showing there. And that's, you know, survivor strategy, like literally by the numbers and what you would say to do. But everything is situational. And I don't know, firstly, what numbers does she think she has to take out Matt? Because if Dave is one of them and she doesn't know about their connection, that could be a massive difference. But does she think it's going to be like her, Tara, Tessa, and Adam? Or does she think she's going to go with Chani and just assume that she can take, you know, the Chani numbers because they're on the bottom? So I don't know about that. Then, of course, Matt could find an idol. Now that Brad's been voted out with one in his pocket, you'd think one will get re-hidden. Then, of course, you know, he could win challenges. So I do think you kind of have to take the shot when you get them. But it's really, really tough. You know, obviously the biggest move basically of your whole season did happen at 8 when Sala got voted out, and that was at an even number. So I think it is really situational. If she can get the numbers together and he does win immunity next time, you know, that would be a really great shot. But if she misses that shot for reasons of idols or immunity or doesn't have the numbers, then it's going to start getting really, really close to that final three, and then she might not get the chance.
Yeah, exactly. And if she does take a shot and she misses, she's going to automatically after that have a pretty big target on her as well, especially if Matt still is in the numbers at that point. And I think it's a bit tricky with Lisa, because we're seeing a lot of the, you know, the hard work that she's doing to try and make some big plays and the strategy that she's wanting to play. But we heard from Brad earlier on that he basically, you know, thought that Lisa doesn't care about winning and she's just there, you know, to make her family proud and all of that she wanted people to perceive her as. So I also see the other risk with Lisa is that if she doesn't make any big, big, bold moves soon, I don't know whether the jury are going to really see her gameplay for very much. Like, I don't know how much they see her doing, or whether they think that she kind of has just sort of tottered along and just happy to be here and all of that. So she does kind of need to be one to lead a big move, I think, just to have something to her name, apart from, of course, she's incredible at puzzles. Like, I don't know if anybody could beat her at a puzzle. So yeah, I definitely think that, Yeah, she's going to have to take a shot at Matt, and it's going to have to be soon. But from next week's preview, I don't know how well that's going to go because she looked pretty upset. And the only thing I can kind of think that maybe she would be upset about is if her plan to take down Matt was failing because of something like Matt winning immunity, which is pretty likely, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, Matt's like a challenge beast. He could easily win immunity. There's a lot of things that could go wrong. And what I do love from Lisa, though, is that she does say that she would rather go down swinging than go to the end as a goat. And that's something that I was kind of, you know, criticizing in Survivor Ghost Island recently when a few of the players seemed to just want to get to the end and get no votes rather than put themselves at risk for a better chance of actually winning the game rather than a sure thing of getting to the end. And Lisa sees that and she knows that that might be her options. It might be really, really risky to make that big move and then get taken out or win. Or, you know, go to the end and be a goat. And she could sit comfortably next to Matt, probably, and they could run the game together and she'll just lose to Matt at the end. She probably sees that she could easily do that, but she doesn't want to. And I really appreciate that from her. She's verbalized it a couple of times. I trust that that's how she really feels and that she'll try to make that move happen so that she doesn't get dragged to the end. So I really like that perception from her as well.
Yeah, I'm so glad about that as well, because like you said, she could so easily go just with Matt to the end. And imagine if it was just like a Matt, Lisa, Tara final three, if Lisa hadn't managed to pull off a big vote, like that would be a pretty dull final three, to be honest. So I'm so waiting for her to make this big move. And I, as much as I love Matt and I'm really liking Matt's game at the moment, I kind of really want her to be able to take out a big gun, even if it's not Matt. I just want her to be able to, you know, coordinate that big move, because I know she's got it in her. She seems like a pretty smart player that's able to manipulate the people around her quite well. So I just think, like you said, there's so much that can go wrong, and she is kind of running out of time, but I do think she'll be able to make something happen at least, but possibly not Matt. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, based on the perception of her and people thinking she doesn't even care about winning the game, it has to be a massive move, and that basically has to be taking out Matt. Like, there's no bigger move in the game, so that would really do it for her. I mean, I wonder what numbers she thinks she has again. You know, she obviously didn't think she needed Renee. She voted out Renee here, so it'll be interesting to see what numbers that she thinks she has. I think that she's really good socially, just seeing the way that, you know, after Tessa came back and was upset, it was Adam and Lisa who were comforting Tessa, and just the way that she was talking to Tara and about Tara's kids then at the immunity challenge as well. I love what she's doing socially, but yeah, she needs that big strategic resume point for her. And I think that could be really good for her. We'll just see whether she succeeds in it.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, I kind of feel like it has to be Matt, or I don't know who else she could go for. But yeah, I pretty much see her. I'm pretty sure Tara would stick with her, and she's probably going to work with Tess and Adam, but who knows what way they're going to go, to be honest.
Yeah. I also want to talk about Dusting Gate, which honestly, when I was watching it and Tara was dusting the reward while they were all moving blocks, I was like, that is such an odd thing to do. And then it became this major plot point. Did you notice it at the time as well?
I actually didn't. I didn't notice until they mentioned it. And then I had to rewind to watch it because I was like, surely I didn't just miss that. So I was like cracking up. That was so random.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, look, I can't fault her for not doing well at the challenge because she did seem like really out of it and dehydrated, but you have to fault her for, you know, being the one to put your hand up to do the puzzle. And they were even when they started on the puzzle. So basically it just came down to one person doing that puzzle to do the entire challenge. So if you're going to put your hand up, that's obviously like a big thing for you to do. And she just wasn't up to it. And just Adam ranting about it and how upset he was about it was hilarious. I also love like the really dramatic music as they walked off to the reward and Adam's just sitting there sulking. This was all amazing to me.
Adam is just the absolute best. I love that whole segment. But yeah, I don't get it because like you said, if you're feeling bad, if you don't feel up to it, just kind of hide in the background. That's what I did if I was feeling really crappy on a day and I knew that I was going to probably fail everyone. Just hide and wait for someone else to put their hand up, especially if you know that you're most likely going to go up against Lisa in a puzzle. I wouldn't want to be in that position. Or at least, I don't know, if you're going to be Tara and you're struggling a little bit, I think maybe just put a little bit more effort in, even if maybe if you're failing, I don't know, she just wasn't moving with much intensity. So I would have been hustling a little bit quicker than that.
Yeah, especially if you're on a team with Adam, like the way Adam acts, I don't know if it's like so much of the other contestants or just in the confessional, but the way he acts when he loses any reward, like I would not be wanting to put my hand up to be the person to have to like either win or lose the reward for him and just be like, someone else do this. Eve, you do this, because I don't want to be like the subject of Adam's confessionals if I fail.
Exactly, especially since Adam had already been talking about how much he loved Jurassic World. I would have let Adam do it. I would have tried to go for that. But yeah, Eve seemed like she had it pretty well sorted. I don't know why she didn't step up. See, that's the weird part. I'm like, Tara must have been, I don't know, she must have nominated herself pretty quickly, because I feel like one of the others probably, you know, would have been pretty happy to go for it. So I don't know, maybe she was confident.
Yeah, I mean, the dusting thing honestly was really odd. Maybe it's like the mother in Tara who's just like a nice homemaker. And I know that that's like Tara in her real life as well. And it's like, just going to make sure this is like really clean and like perfect for my puzzle. But it was just such an odd thing to do. It was really weird.
I think it must just be, like you said, lack of food or dehydration, because yeah, I don't know, that's just a very random thing to do in a challenge like that.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to get into this week's Chismisms. There wasn't a ton this episode, but we are so fortunate to have you, Shannon, who actually played with Matt Chisholm as your host, and now we can do like an interview about what it's like to play with Matt Chisholm right there.
Yes. Oh, God. Matty boy. I do love Matt.
Yeah. So what have you seen that's really changed for Matt from the first season to the second? Because, you know, we love him here. And we're right there. So tell us about Matt Chisholm.
I think he honestly, from season one to season two, he's like a completely different person. I feel like the biggest thing is he's become so ruthless in season two, but I love it. Like a really good sort of ruthless. Those tribals, the sort of questions that he's asking, I think he's done a lot of research into, you know, what sort of questions really bring out, you know, those really interesting answers. So we didn't really have a lot of that. And I think season one was kind of like a test run for him. There was a lot of times where we kind of had to, you know, repeat something and a little bit of word fumbles and that sort of thing. And just kind of in the middle of a challenge, he would sort of throw kind of random comments, whereas, I don't know, whereas now he just seems to have his style kind of figured out. And, oh man, his little, you know, sayings that he throws in there. He never really did much of that in season one, so those are cracking me up. But yeah, for me, mostly, I just feel like he's running tribals, especially. Like, he's really asking the hard-hitting questions, so that has definitely stepped up a notch.
Yeah, but I do still feel like the cast members don't give him enough respect. Do you feel like your cast were giving Matt Chisholm enough respect?
I would say probably not. I don't know. From my perspective, it was kind of like buddy-buddy with him, and there was a bit of, you know, a bit of chuckling when some things weren't going as smoothly as you'd like. But I guess as well, because you're so used to just watching TV when it's already edited, so being there in person is such a different experience. So it's so hard to get all of that right on the first shot. And I know for me personally, I don't know, there were some moments when I would be in one of the endurance challenges, like the one, you know, when you're just holding your arm above your head for as long as possible. So you're in pain and it's just awful, not a pleasant experience. And he would just chuck these random questions at you, like, how are you feeling, Shannon? And I'm just like, not very good, actually. So thank you for asking, but no, not very good. Like, I don't know, I was probably not great because I was not able to kind of give him funny answers back when I was in pain, whereas people like some of the others were just much better at doing that. But yeah, it was more kind of like a buddy-buddy relationship. Even at tribals, it was kind of like a lot of joking, but I guess you get that when you've got, I had Jack with me virtually the whole time. So whenever you have Jack around you, you know, it's going to be sort of a jokey situation. So I feel like it definitely seems a bit more intense with him now. Like, I don't know how much of that joking would be going on. It doesn't seem like he's going into tribals or even challenges and kind of, he doesn't have as much of that. He's still funny and lighthearted, but not the whole time. Like, he seems to be serious a lot more, which I think is actually helping though.
Yeah, you know that it's getting real when he like gives you the crazy eyes. Like, that's when it's getting serious.
I know. Oh, man. I was, like, thrown off guard the first few times I saw, you know, what he was doing at Tribals. But the worst was earlier on where people kind of weren't wanting to answer him. And so some of his questions kind of came out of left field and threw everyone off guard. But at least now it seems like he's getting a lot more responses from them. I wonder even whether they had a talking to that they kind of need to answer the questions, because for a while they were kind of skirting around them every time he threw them one of the hard ones. So I think, yeah, he's definitely getting some better responses, which is making for a much better, you know, TV show.
Yeah, I want to be the one who gives the contestants the talking to about how they need to respect matchism. Like, I think Survivor New Zealand should employ me, fly me over there. I'm going to talk to them about why they need to respect Chizzy, and then that'll, I'll just leave and just, like, get paid as a contractor.
I would love that. Oh, man, he would love that as well. He's such a cool guy. So I think a lot of the time in season one as well, he was kind of buddy-buddy with us as well. So it was kind of like that was just the whole vibe. Whereas, yeah, I think he's kind of decided what sort of presenter he wants to be, and he's kind of found what works for him. So yeah, I'm loving him this season. I especially his little into the drink and all the random, I'm just like, I'm pretty sure everything he says, I don't know anyone in New Zealand that uses that sort of language. So
thank you for clarifying, because this whole time I've been wondering if that's just like New Zealand as a whole, but thank you for confirming that it's just matchism.
I have no idea where it's coming from, like, honestly, apart from obviously old mate idol, but that niggles me so bad because I'm like, I don't know, it's the idol. Do we have to call it old mate idol? That's such a Kiwi thing to do, but it's working for him, so I've come to love it now.
Yeah, he did say rip into it twice in the one reward challenge, like a couple of minutes apart. I was like, you get to use one phrase per challenge, you can't use it twice. I also love from this episode that he said to Adam, we could all be anything we want to be when we grow up. I'm like, damn it, you're so inspiring, matchism.
I don't know whether people are feeding him this, or is this all coming straight from Matt? I don't know where he's getting it from. It's so good. And like, just into the drink, I'm like, what does into the drink mean? Because he's used it for water, which I understood, but then he also said into the drink when they were kind of diving into mud. So like, I don't understand what the drink is, or is it just some sort of loose, liquidy substance? I don't know.
But any liquid. Hopefully not what matchism would actually drink, because then he's drinking some very unsanitary things.
I know. Oh, God, I can't keep up. But yeah, no, I can confirm that most of New Zealand, as far as I know, don't randomly use those sort of phrases, but I think we should, because I love them now.
Yeah, I think you've broken some international hearts where we were like all just assuming that New Zealand is this magical place where everyone talks in this way, and now you're like, nope, it's not like that, and like all our dreams have been dashed.
Oh no, we'll have to just start doing it just for your sake for next time you visit.
Your matchism should be like the leader of New Zealand, and the first mandate should be that everyone talks like that.
Oh, wouldn't that be a wonderful place? What a world that would be.
Yeah, well, we don't have that, but we do have an award named after him. So I'm going to get to the Chizzy. I've got some points to hand out. I want to first start by talking about Adam, who I'm not going to give any points to, but I just wanted to call him out here because he is a power player, you know, and as I said, his social game is so on point. Everyone loves him. You know, he wasn't on the right side of the vote, and I still don't really know if he knew what was going down or if he did that on purpose. So I can't really give him points. He did really want Dave to go, and obviously Dave is still there with an idol. But I just want to say that basically he's one of the bigger players in the game. And, you know, next to the people I'm giving votes to, he's there with them. And then there are some other people who are just kind of like sitting down at the bottom. But I'm going to give one vote to Lisa, who is another power player and is only, as you said, one of a couple people not to be in the conversation to go home. You know, in this episode, it was Adam, who's barely been in the conversation at all, and Lisa, who's not been in the conversation. So that's a credit to both of them. I like the way that she narrates her long-term plan and how she's thinking about the future. I think she played really well socially in this episode. She's obviously right there as Matt's right-hand woman, and that works really well for her now, but we'll see how it goes in the future. But when he's making these moves, taking out Renee, taking out Brad last week, she's there with him, so she deserves a point for that, I think. And then you have two votes to Dave, who didn't play his idol. I know he has a friendship with Matt, and that's really controversial, but you know what? Three votes out of eight, it's scary either way. It just takes one person. It doesn't have to be Matt. It just takes anyone else flipping, even like Atara, who's a bit of a loose cannon, or Lisa, who he hasn't known for as long. So he trusts in that. and again, a great coach, should not play his idol. Plus, you know, the target was on Eve for a while, and it, you know, he got it off Eve. He wanted Renee gone, and Renee was his main rival, and she did go. So I feel like I have to give him some credit there, and he's in a pretty good spot right now with some shields and an idol. So I feel like that's two votes for him.
Mm-hmm.
Three votes I'm going to give again to Matt, who's obviously in the most powerful position. I'm not really sure if he's getting a winner edit or like a major downfall edit yet. I think it could go either way. But the way that he continues to protect Dave under some pretty difficult circumstances, and the way he's playing all sides and has a relationship with every single person in the game in order to play all those sides, really, really impresses me. I'm interested to see how it goes. Lisa obviously has eyes on him. Not sure how it's going to happen with that. But for right now, he's definitely like king of the whole tribe, so I'm giving him three votes. And Shannon, what points do you have for the Chizzy this week?
Oh, okay. So mine is pretty similar to yours, to be honest. So I just had two swapped around, basically, because I was the same. I was kind of tossing up between. I thought Adam did so well, like he always does well lately, but he wasn't really a big power player specifically this week because he wasn't so much involved. Well, it didn't look like he was involved in the Renee, you know, in the whole discussion for the Renee vote off. So I left him out. But number three, I did put Dave. So 1 point for Dave because, I'm just amazed by him. Like, it takes some serious balls not to play an idol when you know how many votes are likely coming straight towards you. So I don't think I could have held strong in his position. I think I probably would have played my idol a long time ago. So he definitely, definitely deserves a vote there. And like you said, Renee was one of his biggest rivals who wanted him out really, really badly. So for her to go is only good for him. And then for number two, I had Lisa. 2 points for Lisa because she is doing really well. She seems to set herself up for, you know, she's always setting herself up for a win at the moment. She's got that really good plan ahead of her. She's kind of planning a few moves ahead, and she kind of knows who she needs to be sitting next to and who she wants to go home. I think she is very, very aware of her own gameplay and where she sits within the game at the moment. And that is why she's so great, because she knows she needs to make some big moves and she's willing to do it, but she's not going to do it and be stupid about it. She's not going to do it if it means that, you know, if it's not likely to work out. So I think she'll wait for the numbers to be on her side, which it looks like, but I think she's put herself in a nice spot this week. And number one, definitely Matt. So I am absolutely loving Matt's gameplay at the moment. I think right from the start, he was one of the people that I did have pretty high just from the very get-go, but I don't even know what that is. I don't think there was anything about him. I think maybe it just, he kind of looks like someone that would win Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's like finally starting to play like someone who could definitely win Survivor. So the way I see it with Matt is, currently, he's got the best chance of winning if he makes it to the end, but I think he's got one of the hardest roads to get to the end, because if anybody has any sort of wits about them in the game, they are definitely going to try and get rid of Matt sometime soon. But for now, he is controlling pretty much everybody, and he's got such good relationships that, yeah, he is the clear, clear winner this week from my perspective as well. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's 6 points for Matt. So he is this week's Chizzy winner. And now he's just like way ahead on the Chizzy leaderboard as well. So well done to Matt.
Yes, very well done.
He's gotten so many points in the last couple of weeks as well. Like he didn't have that many like a few weeks ago. And then since I think the Dylan vote, he's gotten like, I think he's won 3 out of 4 Chizzies or something ridiculous. So he's done amazing. I have some questions for the listeners from you, Shannon. Do you want to answer? Okay.
Perfect.
Robin Starkey on Twitter asks, did Adam just get a major uptick in terms of his potential to be the winner? Even though his confessionals are crazy villainous, in front of the tribe, he's so likable and humble. Do you see Adam as a winner potential? Because I always saw him as like way too villainous and he's going to get a downfall. But it's like, now I could see him winning.
Yeah, I'm the same. I initially was like, no way. Like, I'm pretty sure I thought right off the bat, Adam was going to get out, you know, in the first sort of the first couple of vote offs right at the very start, because I thought surely he's going to rub people the wrong way. But the more he plays, the more I'm impressed. I honestly think he possibly is playing the best social game out of everybody. It seems that way, at least, because everybody seems to like him. He can very, very easily fit in with pretty much every alliance, which is not such an easy feat. So to be honest, if he does get to the end, and I think he's got a pretty good chance of getting there, he definitely, you know, has a leg to stand on. And he just won the immunity challenge as well. He did so well at that one. And like you said earlier, everybody was really, really pleased for him. So I think we don't see as much of it, but I think he's built some really strong relationships with the people around him. So any of people potentially on the jury, I think he could possibly get quite a few votes from them if he was sitting at the end.
Yeah, I think my perception about it has changed as well. So we'll see. I don't know, even in terms of edit, I'm like, you know what? I don't know. They're going to show all this Nike confessionals because it's just so compelling. And like, he'd be a really, really interesting winner, like almost a villainous winner, almost like a Richard Hatch style player. And yeah. I don't know, I find that interesting. And I'm definitely loving him as a character. Like, he brings all the laughs in his confessionals.
Yeah, definitely. And to be honest, if he did win, because I know he is so jarring that he has got a lot of people that dislike him. But yeah, if it was like Richard Hatch, that would only do good things for Survivor New Zealand, to be honest. So if that did happen, I reckon it would actually be a big step up. And I just feel like next season would be even better because of it.
Yeah, because I look back at your season and I really feel like Avi versus Tom versus Barb was, you know, social versus physical versus strategic. And that social side won out, which it so often does in Survivor. We even saw with Wendell and Dom, it was more like strategic versus social. We've seen this quite a few times. The social game tends to win out. But for a really like uber strategic player and like, I guess, like almost villainous character like Adam to win, I think that it would show that like you can be funny and snarky and say funny things in your confessional and call people a dick and be strategic and win.
Yeah, definitely. And then I think if that was the case, hopefully next season we'd get even more players like Adam, because he is just absolute TV gold so far. But yeah, I'm really glad that he's actually playing a good game as well as that. So he's got the great confessionals, but he's actually playing a really strong game, even if you disregard all of his snarky comments. Like, he's a pretty strong player at this point.
Yeah, I totally agree. In fact, he was leading the Chizzy up until like 2 minutes ago. But I think that the problem will be if people come onto the show trying to be Adam in terms of just like if they can win or if they can just get more screen time, they'll probably fall on his face. Because like, that's a natural ability to be really funny and to be really snarky. So you can't just come on the show and like say these things and just like hope for the best. Like, you have to be naturally that funny and charismatic, which I think is really tough.
Yeah, it definitely is. And he is just a natural comedian. Everything that comes out of his mouth, you can tell he's not even like pre-planning it. It doesn't seem like it seems completely off the cuff. But his observations of people are just so accurate. It's hilarious.
Yeah, he is the most extra person ever. I think we have like the extra scale, which is Lisa on the scale up to Adam. And I just want to be around him like, just in the real world. Like, yes, this is a TV show, so he's like, he's born to be on TV and it works because he's on television. But like, what is Adam like just like day to day, just like in the workplace?
I know, I can't wait to meet him in real life. I hope I get the chance, because I don't even know if I could hold a conversation with him. I just think I'd be laughing too much.
I agree. So James on Twitter says, Shannon, you were my favorite castaway last season. I assume he's talking to you and not me. Question, both Renee and Dave were holding grudges this episode. How hard is it to put aside a grudge and play with your head, not your emotions? And if you're open, how hard is it to convince someone who is not?
It's really tricky to put aside the grudges, I do think. Like, I think especially at this stage in the game, like I said before, you're really worn down physically, of course, but mentally it starts to really eat away at you. And everything, you have to realize it, you're living with this huge, huge sense of paranoia. So I remember back in my season, sometimes I'd struggle to sleep at night because all I could think about was, you know, the different options that could happen tomorrow and what sort of moves I needed to play and who's likely to be against me and is that person telling me the truth. So you're living with such a huge amount of paranoia at all times, so that when people kind of go against you and then you have a bit of a fallout with them and you do have a grudge against them, it just becomes, I think it often becomes a much, much bigger thing than it ever would if you were just in real life and you know, were full and not tired. So I think all of your emotions are just heightened. And I think it is really hard to put that aside. I think it also depends what sort of game you're playing, because if you're the sort of person that's gone into it and you're kind of like, just wanting to make friends and, you know, do your family proud and just play a nice game, then I think you're going to hold on to them for a lot longer. But if you're playing that sort of strategic game, and probably also if you've watched a bit of Survivor before, so you know what sort of game you're stepping into, it's a little bit easier to put those grudges aside and kind of see people's moves for what they are, for just good gameplay. Sorry, I forgot the second part of the question.
Oh, if you're open to, you know, basically just seeing that strategy and as you said, you know, if you've seen a lot of the show, you might be more open to it. Then how hard is it to convince someone who isn't open to that and who's holding a grudge to stop holding that grudge?
Oh, yeah, that is a good question. So I think it's pretty difficult, because I think people kind of go into it with a set mindset, and you're either of the opinion that, you know, what you do in the game is who you are as a person. So if you lie to someone in the game, you know, that is just frowned upon. But otherwise, there are people that go into the game thinking, you know, I'm playing a game and I'm allowed to do this because this isn't what I'm like in real life. So I think there's a pretty clear divide between those two sorts of people. And it is pretty difficult to talk the other people around if they are holding those grudges. I think it's really, really difficult when you're still in the game. I think it's much easier once you are either on the jury or, you know, back home, and you can kind of see it for what it is. Because when you're in the game, you're just so invested that it's really hard to separate real life from everything that's going on. So I know for me, for example, obviously in my season, Matt and Lee and Sala as well were all pretty upset with me for betraying them. And while I was in the game, it was pretty ruthless. Like, they had a very clear opinion of what I was like as a person. But once I could be out, and once I was on the jury, because I was on the jury initially with Lee and Sala, both of whom I had betrayed, they were kind of able to, we had a big discussion, and then they could see it from my point of view, see it as a move in the game rather than, you know, me just being an awful person. So I think once you're out of the game, you can kind of separate real life, and that's when you can kind of talk people around.
Yeah, you hope, because there are obviously better jurors as well. So you hope that time people will be fine. But I guess it depends the kind of person that you are as well. If that time in the jury does allow you to get over it and vote for someone you think played a really good game rather than just based on like personal feelings.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of what we don't see, some bitter jurors, I think when you're watching the show, you think it's based purely on gameplay. But what you don't kind of see is all those little things that go on back at camp, all those little things that aren't connected to really any big sort of game moves, but it's just maybe someone is just starting to get on your nerves back at camp. Which is bound to happen if you've lived with someone, you know, for 30 days and you're both hungry and tired at all times. Like, it's bound to happen. So I think as well, there's a lot of things that go on back at camp that sort of rub people the wrong way. And sometimes that sort of thing can get held on to. So it's even harder, because then you have to be able to put that side of things away and also put aside a potential betrayal in the game, and then see someone as a good player who's made some good moves. So I think, yeah, that's when it all starts to get a little bit hazy, and you hope people can just look at the gameplay. But it seems like so often it doesn't work out that way. But like I said, I'm hoping this jury in particular is a little bit less, well, a lot less bitter. And I think they will be, because so far they've got some people on there that do respect big moves in a game, and I think they would probably prefer to give, you know, give the title to someone who had outwitted them and outplayed them and all of that, because I think that's what they respect in a survivor.
Yeah, on that note, Ivan Vajoljak says, who does Shanna foresee out of the people left having the toughest time garnering the respect of the jury?
100%. I know we're bagging. It feels like we're bagging on it, but it has got to be Tara at this point. Poor Tara, though, honestly. I don't know. But she's got to, I don't know.
Yeah, she's not looking good.
Hasn't really done anything so far, and now she's rubbing people the wrong way. So I don't know where she can go from here. I don't know if she's going to be able to claw her way back or have anything to her name. You know, I kind of see the only thing she can kind of stand on at this point is, you know, that she is a mum and she's done so well and she's made it this far. But then she's got Lisa to compare herself to, who's also a mum and has, you know, come this far and has played much, much stronger game than Tara. So yeah, I don't know what it would take for Tara to get some votes. I think she'd either have to go on a winning streak at challenges, which I don't know, depending on the challenge, who knows, but so far she hasn't really been one of the top players in that field. Or she needs to kind of take out a big gun, but she just doesn't seem like one of the players that has that much control over where the votes are going at this point. So yeah, I can't see Tara doing very well if she makes it to the final three, unfortunately.
Yeah. Adam Hogarth says, which zoo animals do each castaway represent?
A great question. I would say right off the bat, I think Lisa would definitely be like maybe like a blue and gold macaw, like some sort of intelligent parrot, because parrots are just, I just feel like they're often sort of watching everything that's going on and taking it all in, but they're really, really intelligent. So they're thinking things over and they kind of plan in advance, and I just feel like save their moves for a little bit later down the track and then either make your life really wonderful or make it really, really difficult. So I kind of see her maybe as like a parrot. Matt. What would you call Matt? I don't know.
I mean, Matt's like a lion.
Do you know what? I was going to say lion, and I don't know whether it's because he's got, you know, long shaggy hair, but
that
I think
why.
More because he seems to be kind of like controlling the pride, you know, and he's a strong player, but he's smart, but he's keeping the tribe together, or the pride, I would say. So he's kind of like a lion.
Mm-hmm.
What would Adam be? Maybe like some sort of cheeky monkey. Yeah. I'm not sure which one. Maybe like a capuchin, like a really smart but really naughty, cheeky monkey that kind of goes around and causes havoc with everybody, but then like runs and hides or something like that.
I see it. I don't know what that monkey is or how to spell it, but I see it.
It's like the typical one. Oh, the one from that you see it in The Hangover. It's the one that you always see in like American movies if they ever have a monkey, or the one that was on Friends. It's like that little cheeky monkey. But
the monkey that's always causing trouble.
Yeah, it's the one that's always like running around causing trouble, basically.
Yeah.
Tara, if you are listening to this, I want to say that you seem like a really, really lovely person. So I hope you don't take any of these comments too hard, because I actually do really like you. I just haven't heard much from you. But so for now, I would put Tara as like maybe like a stick insect, because she's like very hard to see.
Do you have stick insects at your zoo? Is that like a zoo?
We do, which
really?
Is why. Yeah, like I use them for encounters sometimes. So that's why it's not like a random one to try, like, you know, like choose an insect for her to be, but just purely because I work with them like every day as well. It's like fresh in my mind. So I think she would be like a stick insect, because she can kind of, you know, you don't know whether she's there or not, because she's very well camouflaged. And when you do realize she's there, most people aren't too fond of her, because a lot of people don't like stick insects.
I'm learning so much about stick insects on this podcast. It's great.
Here you go. Come to the zoo anytime and I will show you some of ours. They're amazing.
I'll hold you to that.
Yeah. So she can be a stick insect. Who have we got left? Eve and Tess and Dave.
Yeah.
Oh, that is a hard one. I think Eve is kind of like maybe like a little springbok because she's just so graceful and she's so, oh my gosh, I don't understand, just like nothing really to do with Survivor, but I don't understand how her eyebrows and her hair are so magnificent still.
Her eyebrows are so on point. Also, speaking of hair, I wasn't feeling great about Renee's chances in this episode where in her confessionals, her hair was looking like way better. Did you notice this?
I noticed, yeah. But I was kind of thinking, because I remember right back in the past, oh, who was it?
I think Frankie.
Frankie, that's the one. It was Frankie. Her hair all of a sudden in one confessional was like, so sleek and so shiny, but then she didn't. I don't think she went home that episode, so I was like, oh, maybe not. But yeah, I did notice that. But
yeah, especially because there was a spider in her hair, so it like drew my attention to her hair. And then, like in the confessionals, it was so different. I'm like, she's got some conditioner in that hair. I work for a hair magazine for hairdressers. I can tell you for a fact her hair is washed in this confessional.
Yeah, 100%. That is like one of the first things I normally notice, which is sad, but I do. I feel like the producers need to be aware of that. At least this time they haven't, you know, shown people in confessionals in different colored buffs and things like
that. They have a little bit.
Last season. Oh, have they? I must have just missed it.
No, they're like, would doctor the buffs to the point where like they show someone, like they show Josh giving confessional in what was a blue Chani buff because at the time it was on Chani, but the buffs have the names written on it. So it said like Kung Kao on it, but it was blue.
Oh no.
We love Survivor New Zealand. We love it all.
Wow. They're getting there slowly but surely. They're getting there.
No, yeah, but Eve, good eyebrows, and she's a springbok. Do springboks have like good eyebrows?
They are just kind of sleek and beautiful all over, like with really nice colours. I don't know about eyebrows specifically, but they've got really nice eyelashes. So maybe I'm gonna go with that for her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Tess, what can Tess be? Tess, I think, is like, what sort of animal have I not chosen? She's kind of like maybe like a little otter because she's like, I do think she's like quite quick and quite feisty, but she prefers to kind of have a little solid kind of family group that she goes and, you know, can hang out in and be safe in. And yeah, maybe like an otter, although otters are pretty vicious sometimes, which is surprising because they look real cute. But she's, yeah, I think she could be like that.
That came out a bit in the whole Tara thing. So there you go.
Yeah, there you go. She's got a bit of fire to her. So I reckon she's kind of like an otter, maybe like an otter.
Do otters like, is it all like the feistiness coming out on Twitter or is it just like in the real world? Can otters tweet? No.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. As far as I know. But yeah, no, I think she definitely, especially if you consider, yeah, Twitter and things like that, she is like a feisty little otter that is like this like cute little package on the outside and then like real vicious and fiery and quick on the inside is what she's.
And Dave?
And Dave, I think Dave can be a rhino. Nothing to do with like body size, obviously, but just because I feel like rhinos are very intelligent, but kind of not as, maybe not as like cunning as some other animals, kind of more, you kind of know what you're getting with them and they stick to the, you know, they stick to the people that they know and they are just kind of sure-footed and just paving their way. And also, like we've been saying, he has got balls of steel and I feel like rhinos have quite large balls. How he's playing his game. So that will be him.
What a comparison. What a reason to be compared to a rhino.
Oh my gosh. I hope if anybody is listening, I hope they are happy with those comparisons. Also, feel free to come to the zoo anytime and meet your little animal selves.
I wasn't expecting that those answers, but like once you said them, I was like, yeah, you know what? I see it. But it did end with us talking about rhino balls, so maybe we should like move on.
getting messy now, but that was the end of that at least.
Yeah, that's gonna be the hashtag rhino balls. It's actually not. No one hashtag that, please.
Oh my god.
Okay, the last question I have is: Scene Cachet on Twitter says, "Will you come back for an All Star season if there is one?"
Oh, hell yes. Yes, 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 definitely. Yes, please. I honestly, oh my Lord, I'm just like, I don't know whether I made a big enough splash to be invited back.
You did.
I'm hoping so, but now I'm kind of like, season two had some big, big characters. So
they can't have just all season two people.
Yeah, surely not. But I'm kind of like, oh, who would they choose? Would they normally take winners or just, oh, kind of, there's a mixture, eh? Sometimes they take all people that kind of missed their opportunity, I guess. So, oh, I would love that. Wouldn't that be great? I feel like if that happens, it would be still a few seasons away. And by then, I reckon the game would have advanced so, so much that hopefully I'd be able to play it a little bit better this time. I think I'd know where I slipped up, but there'd be a lot of powerhouses to contend with. I feel like I was saying earlier, I'm pretty sure JT would probably get a good chance to come back because he was such an awesome player and kind of didn't get to see his whole potential pan out, and even Dylan as well. Mm-hmm. But up against people like that, oh man, I would really have to really be on my toes with everybody else, but that would be amazing. I'm hoping for it.
Yeah. Really, I think you could play well with a few people from this cast. I think you and JT would be friends. I can see it.
I think so, yeah. I'd like to think so. But I think he would probably end up outsmarting me, but that's okay.
Well, I would like to see him try. So hopefully we get an all-star season with, like, all of my favorites coming back. But that's all I have for you today, Shannon. Thank you so much. I'm so glad that we got to a point where we were discussing Rhino Balls. Again, no one hashtag Rhino Balls. No one's asking for that. We do need a hashtag, though. Here are some other options that I have. I've got Dusting Gate, hashtag Springbok Brows, and also hashtag ShannonCast, because we're Shannons.
Oh, let's go. Oh, do we just choose one?
Well, you can. Do you have? If you have your own, you can give one as well, as long as it's not Rhino Balls.
No, not Rhino Balls.
I've said that so many times now on this podcast, and it's the first time I think I've ever said it in my life as well. So
let's go. I don't often. I try and avoid talking about Rhino Balls even when I'm at work, to be honest.
Me too, and I don't work at a zoo, so it would be like really, really weird if I was talking about it.
It's not ideal in any sort of context. How about the dusting one, because that was a highlight of the episode for me, was the dusting, I have to say.
Okay, awesome. Hashtag Dusting Gate.
Yeah.
Shannon, where can our listeners find you on social media?
Oh, okay. So I have two accounts. If you'd like to see my normal life, boring adventures, it is Shannon Quinstagram. Otherwise, if you want to see some cute animal photos, I am at Zookeeping, which is, I don't know how I ever managed to
That's amazing.
I know. And I got it so late. I don't understand how I managed to. And I feel like I'm not using it to its full potential. But there you go. If you want to see any of my animals, that's where to find me.
I'm definitely going to follow that. I need cute animals.
They're very, very cute. No Rhino Balls in there so far.
And if you ever go back, your loved one's video can just be the animals. And that's what I would prefer to see. Like, that's what I want to survive. It's not happened yet. I just want, like, a letter from home that's just, like, from the pets.
Yes. Oh, man, that would be so brilliant. I hope they do that in the future. We need to put our suggestions in, because I feel like they listened to most of the suggestions from last season. So there's still hope.
Yeah, I've always said I would never go on Survivor, but if I knew that I could get to a place where they would show a video of my cat on national TV, like, that might be the reason that I do it. You know, I'm trying to make my cat famous. She has an Instagram account. Everyone follow evilcat_melody. But, like, if I thought I could get her some valuable national screen time, I would go on Survivor.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And she would need to have her little Instagram handle under the video as well. Oh man. Yes. I would love to see that.
That would be like amazing if my family just sent the photo, like the videos of the cat, just like with her Instagram handle. That would be exactly what I would want on Survivor. But you can find me, not my cat, at Shannon Gaitz, ShannonGaitz. Next week, I'm going to be podcasting about Survivor New Zealand with my Survivor South Africa co-host, Mike Bloom. Super excited about that. I'm podcasting with Mike every week about Survivor South Africa. We're on episode 8. We're doing weekly coverage, so check that out as well. You can find New Zealand coverage and South Africa coverage on the Reality TV Wrap-Ups feed and the Survivor New Zealand Wrap-Ups feed. So follow along, recommend us your friends, leave us a review, reach out on Twitter, Instagram, the Facebook page, Reddit, the website. I'm pretty much talking about it everywhere. Love hearing from you guys. But Shannon, this has been so much fun. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been so great to be able to chat about it with you, a fellow Shannon. I love it.
Not only the best Survivor Shannon, but the best Shannon on RHAP. I'll give you the title.
I'm so glad that we've made it to the top, finally.
Yeah, well, it's been so great to have you on. Thank you so much for being here. Thanks to all the listeners for listening to this podcast. Thank you, Scott St. Pierre, behind the scenes. And I will see you guys next week. Bye.